Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. So, if you were born between 1990 and, well, yesterday, you know what this music is all about. Who could resist the continuing adventures of a bespectacled British schoolboy named Harry?
You're a wizard, Harry.
I'm a what?
A wizard. And a thumping good one, I'd wager, once you trade up a little.
No, you've made a mistake. I mean, I can't be a wizard. I mean, I'm just... Harry. Just Harry.
Just Harry? Come on, you're Harry Potter. And before there was the movie, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, there was the book, the first of seven, which came out in the UK 20 years ago today. Since then, the books about the boy wizard, Hermione, Ron, Draco, Dumbledore, and Voldemort have been translated into 68 languages, sold over 400 million copies worldwide. And by the way, they made J.K. Rowling, who was then a struggling single mother back in 1997, into a billionaire. So what explains the incredible success and durability of the Harry Potter books? And to explore that, we're joined by Margaret Willison. She's a Globe columnist and contributor to NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour. She wrote a piece in today's Globe called 15 Ways Harry Potter Has Changed Culture Since the First Book Was Published 20 Years Ago. And Margaret, welcome.
Hi.
Great
so
to
nice
have
to
you.
Be here.
Yeah, well, it's great to have you, and thanks for coming in. And listeners, we want to hear from you in this segment. What's your first memory of the Harry Potter books? Did you come of age reading about wizards and witches and the boy who lived? What did they mean to you? And what explains their remarkable durability and their success? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also tweet us at Radio Boston. So, Margaret, let me, basic question. What is it about these books that turned them into such a cultural phenomenon?
You know, honestly, it's extremely hard to break it down to just one thing. And in some ways, it's a question of timing. It's that they became popular at the same time the internet was becoming regularly accessible to normal teenagers like myself, so that obsessive fans could find other obsessive fans and know exactly how many of them are out there. But in other ways, it's a testament to the writing and the world building that J.K. Rowling did. Mm. If you look at the history of children's literature, there's always been an appeal for these kind of stories where very normal children step into wonderful magical spaces. You can trace it to E. Nesbitt's The Five Children and It. You can trace it to C.S. Lewis's The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Mm. Or you can trace it to Harry Potter. And of those three books, the links between the normal world and the magical world are so vibrant and well-defined. And the magical world is such an appealing combination of things that feel real and everyday, and things that feel familiar but distant, and things that feel outright magical.
So I love the way you described it. I want to ask you about your personal experience about this, first of all. So you described yourself as a teenager when you started reading these books. So talk about, is that right? Do I have that
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I was about 13. Yeah. I think the third book had just been published when I started reading them.
Interesting. So tell me about that experience. I mean, what happened to your life? How did you sort of relate to these books?
So there's actually a local bookshop here called the Brookline Children's Bookstore. Mm-hmm. The Children's Bookshop in Brookline. And I've been going there since I was very small. They got me into the books. And I would bring a group of friends for books 4, 5, 6, and 7 to that bookshop. We'd dress up in costume, and we would entertain the line of younger children, like some of our guests we're going to be talking to later on, while they waited for the midnight sellings to begin. So I always felt like I was like an RA in Harry Potter fandom.
That's great. So my experience in these books, I was reading them to a young daughter at that time. Mm-hmm. She was younger than you, but it worked even with her, age 6, 7, 8, something about
yeah.
that. And I think you put your finger on something, this link between sort of believable everyday kids on the one hand, but this link with this, you know, this completely magical world. But somehow
right.
the magical world was made to seem almost accessible because the kids, Harry, Hermione, you know, the other kids in the series, Ron Weasley, they were believable.
And not just that, but like the vast majority of what they would do on a day-to-day basis
yeah.
was attainable fantasy. It's just like a boarding school story.
Yes, exactly.
Right. So it's just class rivalries and natural dynamics that you see happening between you and your classmates, but in this beautiful, sort of magical, both in terms of like magical fantasy, wealthy boarding school and magical, literally magical setting, that it just, it pings so many pleasure centers all at once, narratively speaking.
Listeners, 20 years ago today, the first Harry Potter book was published in the UK. What's your first memory of that book? Did you come of age reading about these wizards and these witches? What explains the success, the durability of these books? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. I want to turn now to two guests we have, Nevedita Ramesh and Priyanka Dharampriya. I got through those beautiful names, but they're a mouthful. So welcome, you guys. It's great to have you.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Now, we wanted to bring you in because you're of that age, that sort of came of age with the Harry Potter books, but you co-taught a Harry Potter-inspired class as undergraduate students at Tufts University called Growing Up at Hogwarts, Young Adult Literature and Adolescent Identity. Nevi, Priya, tell me, I'm not, either one of you jump in first, but tell me about this class and what inspired it.
Right. So Nevi and I had definitely grown up with the books and shared kind of this mutual love for it. And we wanted to sort of create something in a space to be able to talk about them and the other books that had kind of affected our identity as we had grown up. And Tufts gave us this really great opportunity to put together a syllabus and be able to teach a class and like teach sort of a discussion seminar with people who had also grown up reading the books. And we were kind of in this unique time period where we were just done being adolescents. Like we were a little bit older than we had been while reading the books, but we could still sort of remember. So it was a really kind of special time where we were able to talk about it.
Interesting. And Nevi, tell me, how did these books define your own relationship with reading?
When I was really young, I hated reading. I wouldn't touch a book. My mother used to say her blood pressure would go up when she tried to get me to read. But at some point, they started reading me Sorcerer's Stone. And there's this really vivid memory of mine where I had them skip the troll chapter because I was terrified. And I also remember when I went back and read it myself. And that's, you know, that's the first fear I remember conquering. And then the first book I remember reading on my own is The Goblet of Fire. Mm-hmm. And I can see my parents' bedroom, me sitting on the bed next to the windowsill and just like speeding through these pages faster than anything I ever did. And that's kind of what led to it all. I didn't even read until then.
It's a great memory. Margaret, one of the things that I think you talked about in this in your Globe piece this morning is these are big, fat books.
Yeah, huge.
And that sort of defied a convention about sort of children's or young children's literature, right?
Right. I mean, the first book was actually rejected by multiple publishers for being too long, and it is by far the shortest of the seven. I mean, it's an incredible thing to say a 10-year-old can read this 700-page novel.
Yeah.
And that's how long the fourth book is. And that's when they take just a giant leap. But you know what? If the story is compelling enough, if the characters matter enough, you can do anything.
Yeah. We've got a bunch of callers to go to, but I want to just ask Nevi and Priya, just sort of chime in on that question that I asked Margaret. How do you decide sort of why these books were so popular? I mean, we talked about the link between sort of believable everyday school kids living their life and magic, but what drew you to them? Let me start with you, Priya.
Well, I just really enjoyed, yeah, the sort of the sense of magic, that sort of borderline of believability and ability to identify with the characters. I think also in this sort of increasingly crazy world that we've grown up in, it really served as a sort of support, or almost like a sort of emotional survival guide in some ways, to deal with a lot of issues and a lot of things that you experience growing up.
Right. Nevi, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, like what Priya said, it really teaches you to be strong in the face of adversity and brave in the face of your fears. There's no counterpart in the real world that's at that young an age that you can really put your finger on. Whereas like these kids that we are watching grow up with us, they like face these very real fears and obstacles and overcome them. And it teaches us that, you know, we are capable no matter what our ages are, no matter where we are in our lives, we can do this.
Let's take a few phone calls. Folks, you can join this conversation. We're talking about the Harry Potter books, 20 years after the publishing of the first one. Hard to believe. Time flies. 1-800-423-8255. Let's go to Anne, who's calling from Concord. Hi, Anne. You're on the air.
Hi there. Thank you.
Sure.
I'm calling with a slightly different perspective. I'm in my 40s and had never had any interest in reading these books or in fantasy or such. And as part of a library challenge last year, they had one for my two children who are in elementary school and for the parents as well. And one of the books I had to read was something that in theory everybody else had read but you. So I went ahead and picked up the first book. And I said to my kids, you know, I think you might really like these. I couldn't put it down, so we started reading them out loud. And my daughter, who showed no interest initially, started picking it up without us and read ahead. And then my son and I continued to read them out loud. We sped through all of them in this last year and just finished the eighth book, the play, yesterday.
Wow.
And so they've been, I think the themes in there, and reading them as an adult and as a parent, you know, is a different experience, I think, when you're reading about poor Harry, you know, under the staircase and, you know, everything that they're going through a parent's eyes is a different experience.
I agree, Anne. I would read these books to my daughter, and sometimes I'd think, what are these adults thinking? For heaven's sakes, take care of these children. They're getting into some terrible situations.
We were talking about that before he came into the studio, too.
Anne, thanks so much for that memory. Let's go to Alex, who's calling from Medford. Alex, you're on the air.
Hi, I just wanted to speak to the point of why they became so popular.
Sure.
And for me, I read them over and over when I was young, like 20 times each the first couple of books.
Wow.
And they were really just exactly what I was looking for. As, you know, a 26-year-old, if I see an owl fly directly at me, I still think to this day that's coming with my acceptance letter. I'm magical and I'm going to Hogwarts. So it just really lets you escape that reality and have like this dream. Magic is real. You know, everything, like they're saying, that you can overcome any boundary if you just set your mind to it, kind of deal. And it was really just a great fit for the time.
Alex, thanks so much for that. Let's try to get one more call in before we go back to our guests in the studio. Amy from Andover, you're on the air. Tell us what's on your mind.
Hi there. So I first found out about Harry Potter when I was about 23, and my husband and I were traveling through India on a three-day train ride, and there was a guy we were sharing the cabin with was reading Harry Potter. He said it's a new book that's come out, and his children had told him to read it. And I thought, and it was a Scottish writer. And I thought, oh, that's cool, but, you know, I'll never read that because it's for kids. And then a few years later, we had our own children. And when our first daughter reached about, I think, seven, we read the first book. And the hysterics she would get into, like fits of laughing where she couldn't breathe, when Uncle Vernon and Marge and everybody was talking, you know. Which is wonderful. And I basically gained a passion and a love for reading because of her and because of that and because of those books. So we took it slow. We read the first three books together and then we took a break because, you know, the fourth book, at the end of the fourth book, they kind of get a little bit darker.
Mm-hmm.
So she had to wait. I said to her, you know, you have to wait a couple of years till you can read that. And she was so patient and read it. So basically she and my son, who is now 10, have grown up reading Harry Potter over a period in our family of about 10 years. We've taken it slow. They've enjoyed every single second of it, and they've both read them numerous times now.
Amy, this is great. Amy, I have a quick question for you. I can hear by your accent that you're British, and I'm looking at my producer notes here on the screen that you went to boarding school in England. And I wanted to ask you about that because I was also sent to British boarding school when I was younger. And these books they resonated for me in a particular way because even though there weren't wizards and magic owls at the boarding school I went to, the Harry Potter books nailed perfectly the sort of British boarding school experience. And
absolutely. Absolutely. I tell my kids, you know, I had a trunk at the bottom of my bed and it was my grandpa's.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's various different things. And the parts of my school looked a little bit like Hogwarts. I mean, it wasn't as grandiose as castle-like, but, you know.
Yeah. Amy, we've got our in-studio guests who really want to chime into what you're saying. Nevi, you're in hysterics over there. What are you hearing in Amy's phone call?
I'm so jealous. just imagining being there and actually living, you know, some aspect of that life is just so, like, awesome to me. It's really cool.
Yeah. Margaret, what are you hearing in all these phone calls? I mean, obviously, they're still hugely popular, right?
I mean, I think the most impressive thing that I'm hearing in all these phone calls, and that I also heard from Nivi in the studio, is just, like, how much this series was a gateway into becoming, identifying as a reader, yeah. understanding that reading was an extraordinarily fun, addictive, absorbing activity. And I think in these books, you have a really special thing of sort of like serious complexity, challenging length, but incredibly accessible and just absorbing language and presentation. So much of the way that J.K. Rowling approaches children and justice is very similar to like Roald Dahl. Which is really hard to read as an adult. You're like, oh my God, this is just child abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you read it as a kid, you're like, this isn't child abuse. This is justice.
This is justice, right. Yeah, exactly. This is the way it works. So how did the Harry Potter series, in your view, sort of affect or influence or change the adult, the young adult literature market?
I mean, it basically created the young adult literature right. market as we understand it today. We didn't have long books being published for children. We didn't have series being published for children at anywhere near the rate that we have it now. And this was actually so big that the reason there is a separate New York Times bestseller list for children's books is because Harry Potter's first three books held the first three spots on the real bestseller list for a year. And they were like, I guess we need to sort this out.
It's amazing. Nevi and Priya, I mean, 20 years on, is there still sort of Harry Potter fever out there?
Oh, I would say definitely.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I was all three agree.
Yeah.
I was telling Nivi earlier that I went to the Harry Potter theme park a couple of years ago, and it's interesting because it's very close to Disney World as well. And so you see kind of grown adults like our age running around as happy as like the little kids do in Disney World. And it's just it's definitely very much there.
All right. Well, Nevi Dita Ramesh and Priyanka Dharam Pariya, they're former Tufts students who co-taught a Harry Potter-inspired class as undergraduates. Thanks for coming in. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Margaret Willison, Boston Globe correspondent and librarian, thank you for coming in as well. And before I let you go, we've got just a few seconds left. Favorite character from the series?
Hermione.
Sirius.
Hermione. I'm going to go with Ron Weasley. I don't know. Maybe there's the gender divide in the studio here. That's it for today. Radio Boston, production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Our show is produced by Kathleen McNerney, Jamie Bologna, and Allison Brusick. We had help today from Caitlin O'Keefe, Zoe Mitchell, and Sean Bowden. Tim Skog is our technical director. Our executive producer is Hitesh Hathi. I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.